there's a very strong energy, in a way, gripping the planet at this time. And I think it's best described as the energy of fundamentalism. And it has so many different aspects, but we see it in the eruption of what's going on in Iraq right now, the tearing apart of the country, Sunnis, Shiites, wanting to do battle with each other. Tea Party in America, evangelicalism, Hasidism, various terrorist forces, all very much in a very potent struggle to hold on to something, to hold on to a belief system that for them is fundamentally right, the truth. And there is a danger to holding on to truth, because the truth is not a thing. It's not a codifiable, knowable, definable expression. It's something that is endlessly, if you will, being re-established, reborn, re-expressed, moment to moment. There is perhaps an underlying truth, but it is not something you can defend or fight to make others believe in. It's hard enough to believe in it yourself. The essence of fundamentalism is holding on to something that you've been told, something that you have been given, something that has been expressed as all that is. And it's usually an idea, it's a concept, it's a force field. And people, as one can see right now in Iraq, are willing to die for it, and have over the course of centuries been willing to die for this truth, this belief. And it is so firmly held, usually, by people that it is unquestionable and it is irreducible, it is absolute, and it is something you don't challenge. You don't look at it from many perspectives. You just say, this is what it is, and it's very hierarchical, and it's passed down to us through various priesthoods, if you will, people who get higher and higher, know more and more, and they pass on this truth, and you don't think about it, you don't examine it, you don't question it, you just live according to it. And it causes great disruption. It causes a kind of passionate fervor in people to do battle, to stand up for their belief, and to become, if in a way, hardened by it. And I was looking in the eyes of soldiers in Iraq last night, massing to do battle, and there was no way to penetrate the density, the thickness, the absolutism of their belief. And this force is very much now playing in the world. And of course, anyone who studied history knows that this force has been available and replaying itself endlessly in history. This belief in an idea, this belief in a concept. And how does one arrive at a place in oneself that is free of dogma, free of the accepted wisdom? How does one find truth in oneself that is, in a sense, discovered rather than told to you, rather than presented to you, rather than carried on as tradition? How do you find truth? Well, this is the little bit that I know. In many traditions, there is something called initiation. And you become initiated into a deeper wisdom. This initiation can be tribal, and there are definitely, certainly in the American Indian tradition, the Native American tradition, various forms of initiation that end up with you changing your name. The person who was given the collective wisdom is now brought into a place of personal wisdom. And it usually is through a process of something. It can be, in some cultures, it was herbal and plant-based transformation, mushroom-based. In some places, it was pain and endurance-based. But people would go through something that transformed them into a singular witness to a personal truth that became for them their truth. Often they would find that in a society of people who had experienced this truth, that there was a collective vision of it. And each person was ennobled by their own individual relationship to it, and yet they were able to become part of a tribal awareness. And it was a wonderful way to begin to experience the world with a shared individual collective wisdom. But it was personally uncovered. It was not handed down. It was go there and find your name. Find who you are. There are many initiatory rites that have gone on in ancient societies. There are not so many now. You kind of look in American culture and you go, where do people get the ticket to individual awareness? And it's very hard to see it. It's very hard to see where this happens. In a certain sense, it's kind of misappropriated. It's getting wildly drunk at a college party. And you kind of lose your sense of self, but you lose it into a dissolution, into something that doesn't so much bring you wisdom, just a sense of release from your own tight mindset. The drug culture happened in America for a while, and that was kind of initiatory, and it created much of the culture that we're in right now. And a lot of people had their own private awakening, but with very little language for understanding what took place, because it was personal but not tribal. You ended up having a drug experience that said the world is not what it appears to be, it is something else altogether. But unless you could find the wisdom in that, and then you would usually look elsewhere, which would be like into Hinduism, Buddhism, cultures that had this wisdom, even your own, it could be Christian, it could be Judaic, and it could be Muslim. But there, within all of those cultures, there are pockets of people who understood a certain truth, and the wisdom that you would look for, the language you would look for, would be within those cultures, or possibly a culture that the singular wisdom that seems to be at the core of all mystical experience, which is the same information, excuse me, that you find in every religion. And Huxley wrote a book called The Perennial Philosophy. It's an amazing book, which describes how the mystical experience is at the core of Christianity, at the core of Hinduism, Buddhism, Muslim teachings, Judaism. And you, if you study that, you begin to see the tribal truth of what we have in this initiation is universal. It's vast, it's beautiful, it's extraordinary, But you're on your own in most cultures today. You're on your own trying to put all this together, except for the various mystical schools that start to form around all of this, the way it becomes commodified, becomes part of the culture. You know, you now have yoga, which was a very powerful tool in India to bring people into higher consciousness, into this initiatory space. That consciousness, which was so remarkable, now you have hot yoga, you have exercise yoga, you have all of these ways of turning this into something that is quite corrosive in a way. It's not what it started out to be. It doesn't have the same intent. So it gets lost and becomes, in a sense, back into the realm of fundamentalism. This is the way you do yoga. This is the practice. This is the form. And that's all there is. And that's problematic, because what's wanted in all of this is a allowing of some deep wisdom to rise up and express itself in a culture that allows for people to sit and to emanate their truth and find how it intermingles with everyone else's truth, and find a kind of a very large and embracive context for all of the knowledge that we all bring into the environment, into the atmosphere. When you have satsang, when people sit together and share in this truth, it's so satisfying, it's so allowing, it's so comprehensive and understanding and individual and collective all at the same time. It's an extraordinary state of being, and I think the world has always been trying to allow this to emerge in some fundamental way, and certainly the rise of Buddhist teaching was a beginning of one of the expressions of that, where you try to take the idea of a very deep awakened being and you try to help share that idea with a very large society. I believe Christ was trying to do that. I think all the great teachers have been trying to do that, and society can sustain it for so long, and then it kind of turns back into mental sort of manipulation of truth. And as soon as that happens, it becomes codified, it becomes locked into a certain kind of structure, it becomes hierarchical, and then there are problems. You don't trust your own teaching, you trust the teaching of the elders or the teaching of the high priests or whoever is running the temple at the time. What's happening right now, I think, in our culture is a bursting through of a higher consciousness. And there is an extraordinary reaction to that. And the reaction to that is the fundamentalist principle. For example, in a Muslim country, and I can't speak all that intelligently about it, but when I was in Tehran many years ago, and I went to, when I would go down the streets of the city with big movie theaters everywhere and women walking around in high heels and dresses, and there was no sense at all of the Sharia sort of law that suddenly came back with a vengeance to fight against the kind of freedom that people were experiencing. The same thing happened in Afghanistan, you know, and it's happening in America. You know, it's happening with the Tea Party idea of, you know, less government, less control, less rules, except for their rules, the fundamental idea of us as individuals having the right to determine our own fate and future, but independent of larger governmental controls. There's something very interesting about that, because what that finally devolves into is endless egotism, I, running the show. And when the egotism runs the show, you end up in horrifically decentralized countries and environments where everyone's out for themselves. And anybody who's watched Somalia or places like that, or even what's happening in many ways in the Middle East right now, you see the beginning of people fighting for their idea, fighting for their truth, and losing, in a sense, the ability to embrace and encompass the whole. And it's very, very painful to watch that happening. So the counteractive to all that is, in a sense, what we're trying to do here, which is sit still, Go inside. Feel yourself moving into this extraordinary opening that we have, for one reason or another, been initiated into. And to discover the simplicity, the vastness, the beauty, the extraordinary openness of just being present. I don't know how the world could ever become collectively like this. I can see it tribally because I can see it in small groups, but I don't know how it would ever spread into the totality. On the other hand, there is a journey to be had, and that journey is a journey through initiation into a sense that we are unbelievably deeply connected to each other, that without compassion, love, empathy, sympathy for each other, without love for each other, the world is a warring space. It's a space of competing individual ideas with the strong man winning. And what happens in that space is what we're witnessing right now. So how do you do battle with that? Well, I don't know that there's a battle with it, but there is this thing that starts to emerge of just simple openness, kindness, love. Jesus preached this. He preached it, and it's so interesting because the empire of the time, the Roman Empire, did everything it could to squash it. And all he was preaching was everything I just said. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Very simple teaching. Muhammad taught this. All the great teachers taught it, and then you watch how it becomes wildly corrupted. And all we can do, really, is to sit still in our own presence, in our own truth, and then emanate this, meaning live in that truth as best you can, not trying to shove it down anybody else's throat, because you can't. You can't tell somebody else, this is the way, because that's just as bad as any other fundamentalist group. The truth is the truth, and you don't have to be in charge of giving it to people. You can just make it available by being an emanation of it, an emissary of it, if you will, by bringing it into the world around you and seeing what happens with no agenda, without thinking that it's better than or less than something else. It just is what is. And you just walk in the space of that isness, and you will be the, if you will, that which brings truth and love and beauty and life into the world. And many people do this. Many, many people in their own way do this. And it's not like there is one way. It's your way. It's the way that you find within yourself. And one of the things that you learn in this process is that it's not given to you through the mind. It's given to you energetically. It almost bypasses the mind because the mind wants to grab hold of it and turn it into a fundamental principle. That's where we get in trouble. We all, at heart, are these fundamentalists because it's easy to think this is the truth and then never have to work with it again. But if you really stay open energetically, this comes into you in whatever form it's in that exact moment, because it's always changing. It comes at you, and you can't hold it with your mind because the mind isn't the tool that works with energy. The mind gets in the way of energy. So you just let go of the mind as much as you can and let this energy come into you, and you just open, and then you live in that space. Mind can play with it. Mind can be there with it, but the mind can't own it. And if the mind tries to own it, you will find a corruption of this energy. You will start to hear from teachers, even in mystical traditions, who say, this is the way. And you have to be careful of that, because when someone says, this is the way, it's really, this is their way. It's not necessarily your way. Your way is this. Be open. Be available. Listen to your own inner voice. Not always your mind, which is an interpreter of your voice, but your own inner voice. And hear this deep space in you that says, basically, yes or no, right or wrong. There's really a part of us that knows. It always knows. And if you get quiet enough, you hear it, you become immersed in it, and you find your way. You find your way. Not the way, and not their way. You find your way. And you find your way because something in you is working and guiding you. It can be your own inner voice, and if you're open enough, it's the voice of the people around you. You begin to hear people guiding you. Not even necessarily teachers, but it can be anybody. It can be something a child says. It just goes, oh. And you get all of this information, all of this wisdom, all of this knowledge, and you find your way through life. And as you find your way through life, you will get to all the stages of life that have to do with knowing what you were doing here, why you were here, the wisdom of old age, if you will. You get to a place where you go, aha, aha. And you will kind of know that there's some stuff you will know for sure, some stuff you don't know, some stuff you may never know, but you become aware of the process of knowing, the process of being, the process of living. And we're all in it, every one of us. Is there a goal in all of this? Well, in my mind, the goal is be here. Or Ram Dass said, be here now. And that's been being said for centuries, of course. Be here now. That's probably the whole goal. And I talk about it a lot, and I think people are probably saying, okay, we got your message. But it really is a message that you have to keep getting because almost nobody is here now. Almost everybody is somewhere else. Somewhere else in time. You're in fear mode about the future. You're sort of dealing with stuff that didn't happen or should have happened in the past. You're in regret mode. You're in all these other places, but you're not here. The entry point to the wisdom that I'm talking about, into the initiation, is right here. You know, some of the Indian traditions use pain as a way of getting to that place because pain is so present. So present. And if you can actually be in it and not rushing away from it, you can actually use it as a doorway into something remarkable. There are so many forces that bring you ultimately into yourself, but you have to then pass through the layers of fear, of distraction, of confusion, of not wanting to know the truth. So many of us have pain inside us that comes from not facing ourselves. And truth comes in the facing of the self, which is being here in this moment, present. So to do that, you have to pass through the layers of, oh, I don't want to look at that. Oh, not that. There's an avoidance, there's a resistance that comes up in everybody that keeps them from getting to where the truth will reveal itself. So what do you do at that point? Well, Rudy provided us with a wonderful exercise. You just ask for help to surrender. You take in a deep breath and say, please help me to surrender. Surrender what? Surrender your distraction, surrender your fear, surrender your involvement with unknown future, with way past past, and just be here. Surrender, surrender, surrender. And you do that, and it digs you deep, 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 deep into this well of being. And the only place you arrive at in your spiritual practice is where you've always been, right here. And when you get there, you realize, one, that yes, you've always been there, and that, two, you've avoided really being there for your entire life. And you've been distracted by all sorts of things. And one of the things that most distracts people is a fundamental belief in something outside, that everything you're looking for will come when you die. That's a big fundamentalist belief system, and that really keeps people from going in here. Because what you're looking for is not here. It's to die as a martyr, to die, you know, and go to heaven. There's all these things about future, and life is just something you suffer through. And what I'm saying, and what many mystics basically say, is no. This is all there is. Who knows about life after death? Who knows about any virgins that you'll get if you die in a certain way. Who knows that stuff? Why would you live in belief in something somebody tells you when truth is right here? Right here. It's so much easier to listen to other people's belief systems than to find your own truth. But if you take a breath and you ask inside for help to surrender, to let go of all the noise, of all the instruction, of all other people's telling you how it is, and just find out how it is for you. And that's the journey. And that's the journey we are all on. And either you are going on that journey consciously, or you are avoiding that journey. And the difference between most people in this world are those who have gone on the journey and those who have not. And it's fascinating. I'm meeting so many people who are on that journey and they don't even know they're on the journey. They are just not accepting the outside fundamental ideas of the world. They are finding their own truth and they're doing it in their own way. And I'm so impressed by that. Even if they don't have our language, the Buddhist, Hindu, spiritual language. I don't mean to limit it to those either, because it, you know, it's certainly in within all the other religions as well. But people who are not finding that language are finding this truth anyway. So the world is very dynamically involved right now. There's a lot going on. We're privy to it all because of the media. We get to watch all this stuff swirling around us. And in the noise of that, the cacophony of that, it's hard to find yourself and your truth. But if anything, it's more important now than ever. Because you need to find out how to live your life in the midst of all of the distraction and confusion and media sort of manipulation of our minds. How do you find your silence, your inner being? How do you get there? That's what this is about. Sit still every day for half an hour and find it. Even if you sit still and you do nothing but look at the craziness of your mind, that's more important than never looking at the craziness of your mind. That's a mistake. Look at what's going on, look at the noise, and then ask who's looking. Who is looking at this stuff? That's the beginning. And then go deeper and deeper and deeper into that truth. And you will begin to live a life of liberation, a life that leads you into freedom, a life that doesn't lead you into a war zone to fight for somebody else's belief that you somehow think is your own. It leads you into your own truth. You may choose to go into that war zone, but you will choose it. It will be your path. But you will make that decision, and that decision must become your own. How you live must become your choice. And it must come out of finding a voice inside that tells you how to do it. And it's there. And if you can't find it, just walking around, sit quietly and say, please help me to surrender. Let go of all the noise and find my truth. And when you find your truth, which will be a constant process rather than a singular event, usually, although it can be singular in terms of awakening, but it's in no way over at that point. It's the truth is not the truth. It's this truth. And this truth in 2 seconds will be this truth. And if you find the truth, don't get a book contract and try to write a book about it, because then you'll become a fundamentalist. My truth, and this is how it works. Let it go. Speak it as deeply as you can through your heart. Tell people you love them. Be earnest. Tell people, I understand the problem. Be aware of your own limitation. Speak honestly with the human beings around you. Live a life of openness of the momentary truth that's erupting and evolving through you. Be that human being. It's the way to live. And you will know it. You will know it because you will feel it. There's something so wildly affirmative about this place. This knowing, this presence. It's so absolute in its truth that there's no place to go to question it. You just go, huh, huh. That's all you do, huh. Because what else is there? You know, and you can't hold it at all, because the minute you hold it, it's over. It's already the old truth. The only truth that is this one right now. This is it. This is it. This is all there is. This is it. So, I don't know if I'm trying to sell this to you or anybody. I don't know what I'm doing exactly other than expressing my truth and trying to tell you, be careful of what you believe in, because belief systems, unless you have found it in yourself, belief systems are outside you. And those systems are systems that are being held firmly and taught year by year, century by century to people, and they're so far away from your truth. They're holding on to a truth that is already 2,000 years old or 5,000 years old. What is that? That's a dead truth. Your truth is this moment. Any questions?
A little bit different from your talk, but Rudy mentioned that whenever he spoke from inside. Nisargadatta talks about being spontaneous. What's the difference, and how to do that? I mean, I want to go inside, but it's mine.
No, not necessarily.
It keeps me out from being in there all the time.
You know, I mean, I've talks about this many years ago about spontaneity and be talking from inside. It's kind of something, I don't know if it's a gift or it's something you just can learn to do, but I never program what I'm going to talk about. Until I open my mouth, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. It just starts to come up. And it comes and it just expresses itself. And it expresses itself by itself. And I just allow the words to come. I am terrible if you give me a script. If I have to talk from a script, I get really, my mind is involved and I get anxious. Will I hit this note? Will I hit that point? Will I get to this? Will I get to that? And so I can't do that. And so I just either come from spontaneity or I can't speak at all. And it's learning to trust that it will flow. Learning to trust that this thing you're feeling inside you will express itself. It will express itself because you're not interpreting it with your own mental processes. You are just being yourself. You're just talking the truth of the moment. And it really has clarity, usually. It has some wisdom in it. It's smarter than Bruce, I know that. You know, these things that come out are their own voice. But they come out of this mouth, and they come out of this structure and this brain. And it does that. It can do that with everybody. But if you have a mind or a ego system that's in check, that's fearful of judgment, fearful of people, what are they going to think about me? If you're separated from other in that regard, it'll be almost impossible to do that. Because there'll be a part of you always looking over your shoulder going, was that right, was that wrong, did I say that, do they understand what I'm saying, do they like me, do they not like me? It's a terrible, terrible conundrum that people get into all the time. I had a dear friend, and she wanted to write a book about how to enjoy your own wedding. Because she hated her wedding, because she was so nervous about everybody at the wedding, whether this would get there on time, and whether these people would be happy, and would these people drink too much, and all of these events. She didn't have any fun at her wedding. You can't, if you separate yourself from yourself and try to make that separated self in charge, it's going to cause you grief and sadness and difficulty and pain. That's usually what it does, because you're not present. You're disjointed. You're disconnected from the moment. If you live disconnected from the moment, you can't be spontaneous. Spontaneity is being right here and speaking the truth of the moment, whatever that may be, and not having a part of you that's sitting back and trying to say, what do they think about what I'm saying? Am I saying it right? Is it this? The minute you have that, you're no longer there. You're in trouble. You're just in trouble. And a lot of people do that, or they get very scripted. This is it. And a lot of people will sometimes say things spontaneously, but they're not from being and presence, they're from the mind. If you're just having the mind talk, you can get yourself in big trouble. I mean, you watch the news all the time, you know, during the presidential elections, and all these people say something that is so off the wall, you know, that it comes out of their mind, and it's exposing, and it's dramatizing, and it's wrong. I mean, it's for them, it's really, it's destructive. So they, so then politicians get very scripted because they can't dare say the wrong thing. They can't talk from their mind and they're afraid to talk from their heart. And so you end up having people who are line by line memorized in a way. And you see that in politics and you go, how can I vote for this person? How can I vote for a person who doesn't know themselves? We keep looking for what we call authenticity. Authenticity is speaking from your being, not from your mind, although the mind comes into it, but speaking from this, from being inside, letting what's inside express itself. Not what's in your brain and in your head, but your whole environment speaks. And when it speaks, if you go deep enough, it speaks a kind of universality and a certain kind of truth, and it really does register. And if you're looking at people not getting it, then it's, then you're probably coming from your brain, probably coming from your head, which is not the place usually to try to make truth available. Does that make sense at all? Yeah. It's, as I said to you guys earlier, the journey from being a normal human being to being a wise human being, to being a human being who has found themselves, let's say, is very short in terms of getting there, but it is a distance that takes years to cover. It takes so long to find a way in to who you are, to trust that, to really go deep into yourself, to dig into your psyche, and to become just you, just to become you, the authentic you. How do you get there? And how do you deal with the fact when you're not that person? What do you do when you're feeling like you're always afraid of what people are going to think about you or how you look, and you know, will they love you, will they not love you? Can you really show your dark side to people? I mean, people are so frightened in the world usually about how they're going to come across that they live in a very dogmatic, strict structure and very, very unhappy state, usually. And somewhere in that, often there's a voice that says, I need to be myself. I need to be free of this character that I'm playing, this presentation that I bring into life. And people want to be free of that, but not until they finally make a decision to do it and become disciplined about doing it, can it really change. You know, the hardest part of transformation is the work that it involves. You have to do the work. If you think it's just going to happen like that, it won't have any impact. Or if it does happen like that, then you have to spend years trying to accommodate what you've learned in that instantaneous flash. But mostly it's work to get to a deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper part of your own truth. And it's an extraordinary journey that we're all on, and it has many layers, if you will, or levels that I guess you could sort of write books about. But I think just go on it. Just say, I've got to change. Just like, you know, those guys on TV who lose all that weight, you know. It's discipline, 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 discipline. You have to sit. You sit every day. You work this out. If you're a runner, you practice every day. You build up your speed. You build up your endurance. If you go to the gym, you know, which I've been doing for the last 6 months, you have to go every time. You can't skip. You can't go once in a while. It doesn't happen. Go once in a while, you hurt yourself. You have to be regular with whatever you do. You have to be consistent. And out of that consistency comes transformation. You really do grow. Well, how do you grow? You become more and more internalized. You begin to find the presence in yourself. You begin to not listen only to your mind, but to something much quieter that underlies the mind. And you become free of the character that you were created to be by your parents and your schoolmates and, you know, the system. The system makes us into somebody that we're not. And we think that's who we are, but it's not who we are, because it was defined when we were 2 years old and 4 years old and 7 years old. You know, things get built into us when we're very young, and you think, well, that's who I am. But yes, it's who you were when you were two. But you locked in on that and built on that structure. And if you keep building on that structure, you end up as a person who has nothing to do with who you truly are. And the only thing you can do is unbuild that system and go back to, oh. And you become this free, open, viable, wonderfully life-embracing entity. That's what you become through effort. And the only way to get there is to find a discipline that will bring you there. And the meditative discipline is very effective if you use it right, but I think there are probably lots of different ways to do it. I don't think I endorse just a single path. I endorse any path that begins to help you break it down and get in touch with self. But if you only break it down with your mind, that won't do it, because the mind is only a part of this. It's only a small part, and it's only letting go of the mind that you can begin to see where the mind got lost. You can begin to recreate a sense of who you are outside of what you've been told you are. And that's a great journey to be on, and it's extraordinary life that it presents for you. And if you do it, you will be grateful. And if you don't do it, you will die as lost as you were when you were a kid. You know, you just leave the world going, well, I don't know. And that's not the best way to leave. Okay, it's a long talk. Thank you guys for coming. Love you very much, and I really appreciate you being here, and onward.